Hello and welcome to the Hardy Report. My name's Edward Hardy, and for today's interview, I'm joined by Len McCluskey. Having joined the Transport and General Workers Union in 1968, he rose through the trade union ranks to become General Secretary of Unite the Union, a post he held from 2011 to 2021. And he's the author of the books Why You Should Be a Trade Unionist and Always Red, both of which are available to purchase now. Len McCluskey, thank you for joining me.
It's good to be with you, Ed.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you first joined a trade union back in 1968. Your honest and at times explosive autobiography covers your life in the trade union movement and involvement with the Labour Party. How does the government's hostility, because we're in a time right now where the government is being particularly hostile to trade unions, how does that compare to what you've seen through your life? Because you've experienced many different fights for the trade union movement during your time, and some of which you talk about in the book.
Yeah, I mean, nothing changes, I'm afraid, Edward. The reality is that the Conservative Party and the Conservative governments have always been anti-worker and anti-trade union. Back in the 80s, of course, Thatcher introduced five pieces of legislation. And the purpose of the legislation is to simply try to make trade unions ineffective. And in many respects, there was an element of success for Thatcher. That's been followed up by Cameron introducing anti-union legislation. In fact, David Davis, the highly respected Conservative MP, regarded the Cameron piece of legislation as reminiscent of parts of it, reminiscent of Franco's fascist Spain. Cameron goes, in comes a new Tory government, and it's the same old. They're now introducing legislation to make it legal for agency workers to be drafted in by a company who have their employees legally out on strike. It's absolutely disgraceful. And incidentally, and this is something your viewers might be interested in, the Agency Employers Federation actually don't want this legislation. They think it's bad for industrial relations and it will only prolong the dispute. Nothing changes. The truth is that working people can only ever rely on organized trade unions. And any of your viewers watching who are not in a trade union, I'd urge them to join the trade union that is an appropriate one for them, because the reason the Tories continually attack trade unions is because they see us as the last form of defence.
You mentioned about the attacks that the Tories are levelling against trade unions right now. Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak, one of them will be the next prime minister, and it seems that whichever one takes over, particularly if it's Liz Truss, she's promised to follow through with Margaret Thatcher in crushing the trade unions. She dresses like Margaret Thatcher and now wants to behave like Margaret Thatcher in her treatment of the trade unions. Do you fear that the trade unions are in for a fight, something that they've not really seen since the days of Thatcher now?
No, I think trade unions have been fighting now for decades, it seems. If Liz Truss is stupid enough to try and attack trade unions, then she'll fail. There's no question about trade unions being crushed. In fact, the recent behaviour by the government and indeed by the candidates to be prime minister regarding the rail strike is an indication of just how out of touch they are. They were hoping that the public would be against all these strikes, when in actual fact, what they found is a lot of sympathy within the public arena. So instead of attacking trade unions, they should be working with trade unions like other governments do throughout Europe. There's a partnership with many unions in the likes of Germany and France and other nations, and to try and work out problems that we currently have. And they've miscalculated, and it's an indication of how out of touch they are. Now, I hope an element of common sense will prevail because, of course, Sunak and Truss at the moment are just appealing to 160,000 Tory members. And God knows what the makeup of those 160,000 are. I think once Truss, it looks like Truss becomes Prime Minister, maybe wiser counsel will prevail, because there's much bigger issues to solve at the moment than looking at trade unions and how they can be limited even more.
The widespread public support we're seeing for this recent string of strikes, and it's something that flies in the face of the normal reaction to striking workers, particularly in the railway sector. The Conservative Party and the right-wing media outlets have been running, up until now, a fairly successful campaign, whipping up opposition against striking workers, trying to demonise them, betraying them as a nuisance, hurting the public by, you know, cutting off much-needed services, rather than these people who are just fighting for decent conditions, fair pay, particularly in light, recently trying to get pay that rises in line with inflation. How can unions win the war in the media? Because it's been a challenge that unions, particularly even under your leadership, have sometimes struggled with.
Yeah, well, since I was involved in the trade union movement, trade unions have always had a bad press. There's very few in the media arena who support trade unions. Sometimes the Daily Mirror, the Morning Star, of course, is a paper, unfortunately, not with a large circulation, that always supports workers. So it's not a new problem. And all you can do is continue to try and explain. And I think you mentioned that the media have been successful in whipping up anti-union feeling. I don't think that's strictly true in this current round. People see workers engaged in strike action all over the place with inflation running rampant. And I think what media I've seen and the public reactions that I've seen has been one of, well, we understand why they're doing it. Let me just make this very quick point. I've never met a worker who likes to go on strike. And I've been involved in many, many, many strikes over the last 50 years. It's always the last card in the pack. But for service workers, it's the last card in the pack, because they know that any action they think take, whether it's public service workers or private service workers, innocent members of the public get caught up in the dispute. If members in a car factory are taking strike action, then the battle is between them and their employer. Both suffer financially. It does an impact on innocent people, but service industry workers do, and that's why they're always very, very, very careful. The only time that they take and vote for strike action is when they feel a great sense of injustice. And the only way to resolve that is around the table. Let me just make this point. Again, not many people will know this, but the government, we're picking up rumours that the government have been telling the rail companies behind the scenes, don't sit down with the trade unions, don't sort out this, because they feel it's a winner for them. And of course, they've come unstuck. I happen to know personally the general secretaries, Mick Lynch, Mick Whelan, Manuel Cortez. These are three decent people, highly experienced, and with an element of goodwill on behalf of the government and indeed the rail companies, they would be able to strike deals and avoid all this current problem.
That's something that I'd like to dive into for a minute, what maybe drove these strikes to the point where they've got to now, because we're seeing strikes on a scale that really hasn't occurred for many years now. Multiple sectors, that postal workers, rail workers, telecommunication workers, are going on strike, considering further strike action. A lot of it is put down to obviously the cost of living crisis and fighting for better pay that rises in line with inflation. Do you think that's the main driving factor, or do you see that it's potentially due to a longer period of abuse or disrespect from the government towards unions failing to take into account?
I think it's a combination of both. no doubt that the inflation rate at the moment is driving workers to say enough is enough. There's a great campaign at the moment being launched called Enough is Enough. And in a sense, that sums it up. You know, you're talking about workers who haven't had pay rises for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You're talking about many workers who have got the same purchasing power today that they had 10 years ago. And it gets to the point, unless governments are dealing with this in a proper, decent, fair manner, that this enough is enough attitude comes to the forefront. And that's precisely what's happening at the moment. You know, inflation at 9-10%, we're indicating that it's going to go up to 13%. And we've still got employers, we've still got companies that were only offering 2 and 3%. See, 18 months ago, we didn't have this problem. Inflation was 1.5%, 2%. If employers were offering 1% or that, then there was maybe a feeling amongst workers that it wasn't really that much in their interest to take strike action. But now, you know, 10% inflation rates, 11, 12% moving up to, and they're still being offered 3%. The employers are living in yesteryear. And the main issue, of course, is that these companies are earning massive profits. The CEOs, the senior leaders in all these companies are on extremely high wages. And workers have said, well, we've had enough. And that's what's driving it. There's a confidence. One of the most important words I've learned in my career is representing working people is confidence. If working people are confident enough, anything is possible. And there's a confidence at the moment running through organized labor that we'll see more and more strikes unless employers wake up, smell the coffee, and start treating their workers fairly. And the other thing I'll mention, of course, is the pandemic. Many of these workers, public sector workers, private sector workers, have been working through the pandemic, helping all of us. And suddenly at the end of it all, you know, they don't want a clapping on a Thursday night. They'd like some decent pay so that they can and their families can live decently.
Obviously, trade unions can have a big impact, as you talk about, in fighting for these rights and securing pay rises and fair conditions for workers. And they play that crucial role. But unfortunately, part due to Conservative governments chipping away at the power of trade unions, but partly due to, in some areas, a lower membership, trade unions have been seen as not having the power that they once had in negotiations. There has been a decline in the union movement in membership. In 2019 to 20, union membership stood at 6.67 million, which was 16% lower than it was in 1996. If trade unions are to counter workers' woes, regain that power that they once had in society, how can they get employees who aren't signed up to trade unions, potentially reject trade unions or don't see themselves within a trade union, how can they win those over and get them to sign up?
Well, it's a good question, but there's a few issues that I'd point out. First of all, the decline in trade union membership is purely down to the fact that traditional industries or traditional manufacturing base has declined dramatically. And work has now moved more and more into the precarious sector of the economy, the gig economy, zero-hour contracts, agency workers, self-employed, bogus self-employed. All of that is very, very difficult for trade unions to organise. You know, a trade union is a group of workers coming together to form a union. And trying to get that message across in certain sectors of the economy is, of course, the key. You know, those workers, let's say in the IT sector, have to see trade unions as being relevant. But as regards the importance, you know, I often hear Tory MPs, right-wing newspapers saying that trade unions are now irrelevant. nor as relevant. And I have to smile because I think to myself, well, if we're that irrelevant, why do they keep attacking us? Why do they keep trying to shackle us? Of course, they know that we are relevant because although membership has declined, in the major sectors of the economy, trade union membership is quite dense. If you look at the railway industry, as an example we're talking about, it's virtually 100% trade union membership. You can go through a whole host of different important sectors, from energy to chemicals, right the way through to car manufacturing, even major manufacturing sectors. And density of trade unions is very high. It's only when you add in all of the precarious workforce that the percentage actually declines. Unfortunately, we're not a nation that builds anymore, manufactures as much as we should do. I think our economy is something in the region of 73-74% service based. People shouldn't be deflected by the idea that trade union membership is declining and people don't want to join unions. Here's another fact. The reality is that if workers were not afraid to join a union, and there are millions of workers out there who would join a union tomorrow, but they know, even though it's illegal, they know that they would suffer by their bosses. And I'll just make this one fact, and this isn't a trade union fact. This is, if you take a union organized workplace and a non-union organized workplace, same size, same industry, the union organized workplace will have better rates of pay, better conditions, and it will be safer to work in. And that's simply because bosses have never been philanthropic. They don't give things to workers. It's only when those workers band together that they're able to get a fair share of the wealth that they create.
Do you think the solution then could be a restructuring of the way unions operate towards those within the gig economy and working within that? Because obviously the premise of the gig economy is it's quite difficult for workers within that to unionize and come together, although we have seen some examples of workers coming together, taking on corporations like Deliveroo. But do you think that's the way that the trade union movement needs to operate? Then it needs to appeal more to that side of things.
I point out in my book, in my autobiography, about the future way of trade unions to operate. And there are smaller unions that are popping up to try to see if they can engage with this difficult area to organise. And they're not affiliated to the TUC, but my attitude is if they can bring about a collectivism, then good luck to them. I think they'll find it extremely difficult. I don't want to be pessimistic by any stretch of the imagination, but my belief is that the abuses that are taking place within the precarious economy can only be changed by political legislation. Zero-hour contracts, for example, an absolutely despicable and disgraceful method of using working people. That can be changed if there's organisation. My union was involved in a campaign to bring about change in certain companies, and we were successful. But in the main, you have to look at other companies. Sports Direct was one that we were successful in. But the legislation has to be brought in to make certain that there isn't this bogus self-employment, casualization, which takes us back into the 30s. It's bad and it has to be changed politically.
With workers being squeezed in a way that they haven't felt for decades, public support now rising in some areas for striking workers, people understanding the struggles that these striking workers are going through, and the anger at the government for its lack of action. Do you think now is a time for the trade union movement to really seize the moment and conduct a mass unionisation drive?
There is as we speak, more workers joining trade unions. Of course, it is also the time for the Labour Party to come out and demonstrate what side they're on. I'm afraid we've got a leader of the Labour Party at the moment who you wouldn't quite know whether he was on your side or not. And these are difficult, difficult times for ordinary working people. Energy bills going through the roof. Why is that the case? Why is it that in France, just 30 miles across the channel, their energy bills have only gone up by 4%? And in other European countries, the simple reason, of course, is they are nationalized. They are controlled by the government. Here, we've got energy companies who've given billions and billions of pounds to their shareholders, and are yet still in a situation where these ridiculous increases are now being brought about. What are we saying about that? What are our political leaders saying about that? We know the Tories, well, they're their friends, so they're not going to do anything about them. They may give them some bailout money, as we've just done with some of the companies. They may put a fund to one side of taxpayers' money that they can draw on. But what are Labour saying? We should be nationalising our energy companies, our railways, our Royal Mail. All of these should be taken into public control so that the prices which are forced on ordinary working people can be properly controlled. So we need a political voice as well.
The way that the Labour Party responded to the recent spate of strikes very much disappointed people within Labour's base. Keir Starmer told his front benchers that they can't join picket lines. Some of those went against it, but he told his front benchers not to join the picket lines initially. There seems to now be some confusion over whether or not they are allowed to join picket lines and represent them.
Well, there's constant confusion with Keir, I'm afraid. The truth is, how ridiculous for the Labour Party, the very party that was born and created by the trade unions. We now have a leader saying, don't go near picket lines. He's scared that the public, he's the same mentality as the Tories. They think the public are against strikes and they're out of touch. And I'm afraid Keir is as well. To have sacked Sam Tarry was ridiculous and disgraceful. Confusion, you're right, because some shadow ministers have now been on. He doesn't know what to do about it. It's quite simple. You should always be on the side of working people. I mean, in my book, I detail at some length my relationship with Keir and how things, unfortunately, have gone off the track. He was elected on a radical program. He was elected to unite the party. He told me that was his most important thing. Since then, all he's done is attack the left of the party. We've lost 200,000 members. The 10 points that he ran for leadership on have been abandoned. And I don't believe that's the best way to kind of demonstrate to people that you can be trusted. So yes, running the Tory governments are terrible at the moment. Even when Liz Truss takes over, I'm not sure they're going to get any better. In a sense, they're Keir Starmer's best ally because they're so poor. They may continue to shoot themselves in the foot. I'm pessimistic about the next general election because if Keir doesn't come out to tell people who he is, what Labour stand for, what the vision is, then I fear the worst.
That problem that Keir Starmer faces with his concern that people will see Labour as the party of protest, not a party of government, if it stands on the picket line. Moderates within the Labour Party raise fears that striking workers and unions that are viewed as being militant risk the chance of Labour getting back into government. Obviously, you believe that Labour politicians should be standing shoulder to shoulder with working people, but how can Labour politicians support legitimate industrial action, these workers that are fighting for better conditions, better pay, without creating that alarm amongst those that oppose strike? Because if Labour is to get back into power, it has to be a united front on all sides. So how does it do that without causing alarm or upset one way or the other?
Demonstrate what you stand for. if Labour are to be with any chance at the next election, and remember, for Labour to win an overall majority at the next election is impossible. Scotland has been lost to us. We were telling the Labour Party decades ago to wake up and smell the coffee. They were losing the trust and the support of the Scottish working class because the SNP became a more radical alternative. They didn't listen to us, and now Labour is in the wilderness in Scotland. For Keir to actually pull off a hung parliament, he has to win back the Red Wall seats. These are our heartlands, and these are our heartlands that are full of trade unionists. And people don't want strikes. Nobody wants strikes. But they want, when there's issues, to know that their leaders are on their side. At the moment, they just don't. Keir has made a mistake about strikes and picket lines. He doesn't have to come out banging a big drum. I won't be holding my breath for that, supporting strikes. But he should nuance his message in a way that he's not against the strikes, because that's effectively where Labour found itself, and it's a ridiculous position to be in. If Labour are to lose the next election, it won't be because of the trade unions. Remember, it's the trade unions who pile all kinds of money in to assist the Labour Party. It won't be the trade unions' fault. It will be the fault of the leadership and the lack of vision that needs to capture the pulse. My experience tells me that people will only vote for a party if they feel they understand what that party's for. Tony Blair did it. Everybody knew what Tony Blair stood for, and he captured the pulse. Corbyn did it. Everybody knew what Corbyn was. And when Jeremy went out in the 2017 election, he captured the pulse of the nation, almost got to power himself. That's what Keir's got to do.
Talking about the Labour Party and what they need to do, obviously you've been critical of Keir Starmer's vision and what he stands for and what Labour stands for under him, because it's not entirely clear. Is there someone you see as needing to step up to present that clear vision now that's seemingly missing?
No, I don't. I think that's too academic a question to ask. We've got what we've got. Keir Starmer presumably is going to lead us into the next election. It's less than 2 years away. My only message is that if he doesn't give us a vision, you say I'm not clear on his vision. I actually don't see that he has a vision at all. That's what he needs to do. He's going to lead us into the election. And the people he has around him at the moment are basically individuals who seem to take the view that if you say nothing, then nobody will be able to attack you. Nobody will be able to ask you questions, and you just become prime minister by default. It doesn't work that way. People have got to know what Labour stands for. And if he's not able to do it, then I think he'll lose the election, and then he'll presumably step aside and somebody else can step forward. We can start talking then about, is there anybody capable of stepping forward to give the vision that is needed?
You mentioned earlier about how the Labour Party potentially at best are going to get a minority government here, at worst are going to see the Conservatives re-elected with a majority at the next election. With that in mind, while I know you're not going to be a fan of either, if Keir Starmer doesn't take government, we're going to have Rishi Sunak or Liz Truss as Prime Minister for the next 2 to 7 years, potentially. Who do you see as the least worst option here?
Oh, I think either of them are going to be amenable. It's why, of course, I'm desperate for a Labour government. I mean, some people say, well, you shouldn't criticise Keir because that makes his position even worse. The problem is, if he continues on the course that he's on, we will lose. As you say, we'll have either Truss or Sunak, neither of whom I've got any time for. So I want Labour to win, but Keir has to step up to the mark, because at the moment we are I think we're in trouble. As soon as it looks like Liz Truss, as soon as she gets elected, the opinion polls are already indicating that even in the red wall seats, you know, she's likely to have a lead or a sufficient a support to stop Starmer winning. So my question is just a simple one to Keir. What do you stand for? Whose side are you on? And what is the vision? Because that's the only thing now that can pull us away from the thought, the horrible thought that these Tories might be in for another 7 years.
Finally, if you could enact one policy to tackle the challenges you see facing the UK, what would it be and why?
Well, I touched upon before about the current crisis. The reality is that at the moment, people are facing desperate situations, and the Enough is Enough campaign are simply calling for specific issues, which seem to me to actually hit the point, and that is making certain that the public utilities that we have are in the hands of government, making certain that workers have decent rates of pay, because for me, that is critical to be able to stave off some of the attacks that people are having. And in a sense, make ordinary working people feel that whatever crisis might be around the corner, that their views are being taken into account in a way that overrides the billionaires who have increased dramatically, the multimillionaires, the multi-billion corporations that are paying less tax than they ever should. We should have fair taxation that brings in the amount of money that's needed to bring about that leveling up. That is radical policies that are needed. We're never going to get them from the Tory government. But Labour needs to find that radical edge again. Otherwise, people will feel that nothing is being offered to them and we'll end up losing again.
Len McCluskey, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
That was Len McCluskey, the former General Secretary of Unite the Union and the author of the books Why You Should Be a Trade Unionist and Always Red, which are available to purchase now. You can find out more about him on Twitter at Len McCluskey. That's all for today's episode. What did you think about that interview? Let me know on Twitter at Edward T. Hardy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Or recommend this podcast by submitting a review online and sharing it with friends and family. Until next time, goodbye.